Hi, my name's Julie. You got my whole name? My name's Julie Gould Marothi. I grew up in New Orleans, and back when I was about 10 years old, my cousin gave birth to a deaf baby.
From Home of Radio, you're listening to Real Time with Alex. Today we're talking about deaf people, their culture, education, everything deaf. This is Julie Marothi, a sign language interpreter, a teacher, and a mother. I'm speaking with her about her experience with the deaf. Stick with us.
Matthew sort of intrigued me from the start. Matthew had other issues besides deafness. He looked like a very old man. He was born, I guess, premature. I don't remember all the details because I was, you know, it was a long time ago and I wasn't told that much about his condition. But he had some facial abnormalities and he looked very old, and I was pretty scared of him as this little baby. He just sort of freaked me out. And then later it was found out that he was deaf. And at the same time, there was a preschool for deaf children around the corner from my house. And the kids were never in session when I was home, because when I was at school, they were in school. So I never saw the kids, but I would walk my dog around the block and I'd see this little yellow cottage behind a fence. And it said, there was a sign on it that said, "The Bright School, Preschool for the Hearing Impaired." And I used to read that sign and wonder why hearing impaired kids would need their own school, and what the ramifications of being hearing impaired were. We don't even say hearing impaired anymore. The preferred term is deaf. But that's what the sign said. So I had these two things sort of happening at the same time: my curiosity about this school and then my cousin being born deaf. And he ended up going to that school. And the first summer that we lived in that neighborhood, he went to that preschool. And my mother suggested that I volunteer there, and I did. And I just totally became enamored with the kids. It was not a signing school. It was an oral preschool. And so one of my jobs as a 12-year-old was to supervised snack, and I had to hand out juice and cookies to these little kids, and I had to make them say, "Juice, please," and "I want a cookie," before I was able to give them a cookie. And I didn't like that. I felt like it just felt very mean. It felt like I was training a circus animal, or It didn't feel like respectful human interaction. I didn't like it at all, but that was my job. That's what the task I was given, and so that's what I had to do. But while I didn't like that level of interaction, I did want to work with deaf kids. And that summer, I asked the principal what I had to do in order to grow up and have the job she had. And she said, go to college and study deaf education," or at the time they would call it education and hearing impaired. So I did, and I continued volunteering elsewhere in high school because we moved up north. I only lived in that house for about a year and a half or so. And my family moved up north, and I did volunteer work at a nearby institution, I guess you would call it, Elwyn Institute. So I did volunteer work at Elwyn throughout high school. It was fairly close to my house. And I majored in deaf ed, and then I graduated, and I started working a few years later at the Pennsylvania School for the Deaf as an elementary school teacher. And after a few years of teaching, going to grad school, getting a degree in literacy to help figure out how to teach reading to deaf children, because that's the biggest obstacle to deaf education is reading and English literacy. I continued teaching there for a few more years, and then when my son was born, I took off from work and took a hiatus from my career and started interpreting part-time. And as he grew older, I increased my interpreting, and to the point that rather than go back to teaching at some point when he got older, I just interpreted more and more, and then I ended up starting my own interpreting agency 2.5 years ago.
The hearing community is very oblivious to deaf culture, but there are actually many nuances that are very different than hearing English.
The first one that comes to mind, I think, is probably the most commonly perceived, is that deaf people are very, very blunt. And part of that is the language. There's not a lot of room for nuance or hints and suggestions. It's a language that really requires you simply say what you need to say and not be subtle. And so deaf people are considered to be very blunt. And it is true, as most stereotypes are, they're based in some degree of truth. It tends to be a cultural trait among many deaf people that they will simply say what's on their mind. So, hey, how you doing? Wow, you've gained weight. You look a little fat. A hearing person would never say that to another hearing person, but a deaf person would say that to someone. Or, wow, who cut your hair? Do you like it? Making a face like, God, what an awful haircut. Things like that. Which is just kind of, you know, makes hearing people stand back a bit. You're taken aback a bit. But it's also very refreshing, you know. There's not a lot of beating around the bush. There's not a lot of soft soaping and just, you know where you stand. Well, a lot of the culture, too, comes from the schools for the deaf. And so what's interesting about it is that you have most deaf children come from hearing families. So you have a small group of deaf kids of deaf families and families that are genetically deaf for generations on end. But most deaf people have parents who have never even heard of deafness before, or never met a deaf person before. And so they suddenly have a deaf baby. What do I do? Today, that what do I do question is changing because of the cochlear implant, which is a whole nother story. But let's just look at history of the last 100 years up until, say, because deaf schools are currently changing rapidly right now, let's say until the 90s, 1990s. So for that 150-year period, people have a deaf baby, they don't know what to do, and that deaf baby gets incorporated into a school for the deaf, first, you know, with an early childhood program of living at home. Or, depending on where you live, like down in West Virginia, there were two-year-olds that were living at the school for the deaf in the dormitory, babies. But these children would grow up at a school for the deaf, surrounded by deaf children, deaf adults, sign language, and that would be more home to them than their biological homes, their family homes that they would go home to on weekends and holidays. And so they were very much growing up in two worlds. And in the hearing world, they were pretty much in a vacuum because, sad to say, most of the time, families would not learn sign language, at least not to the level of fluency. There's such a tremendous barrier because of the language difference. You know, Helen Keller said that if she had to choose between, or if she could choose between being deaf or blind, she would rather be blind. Because she said, blindness cuts you off from things, deafness cuts you off from people. And it's very true. The deaf community is very strong among deaf people. And that's why they have a deaf community, because they can then communicate with each other, and they have built everything that the larger communities have: language, culture, theater, humor, literature, schools, everything. There's a saying, deaf people can do anything but hear, and that's very true. And there's a very strong and large deaf community in America. Historically, sadly, in terms of literacy, and this is why I studied reading, writing, and literacy at the graduate level. Historically, schools for the deaf in the U.S. for the last 100 years, most high school graduates read at a third grade, maybe fourth grade reading level. The newspaper is written at a sixth grade reading level, with some newspapers. New York Times is a little higher than that. So then you would say, well, then it sounds like the education is pretty terrible. And I would just say that we have not yet figured out how to teach reading to children who grow up deaf in a primarily hearing environment. That being said, here's what we do know. When a deaf baby is born to deaf parents, those parents sign to that baby from day one, just like a hearing parent coos and oohs and ahs and talks to their hearing baby from day one. The deaf child growing up in a deaf household is hitting the same language development milestones as a hearing child growing up in a hearing household. So they have a full first language and they are right on target with language development. Then they go to school and they learn English as a second language, and that's not so hard for them because they've got a first language to work as a, to use as a springboard. Now, take the deaf child born to hearing parents, and it takes a while. So the parents are oohing and aahing and cooing and talking, and the kid is just looking, going, well, they're moving their mouth, but they're not getting language. And then it takes a while to figure out that the child's deaf, and then the parents mourn that their child has a problem, a disability, and then the whole thing starts with, well, what are we going to do? Are we going to do oral? We're going to do sign language? We're going to force the child to speak? We're going to all learn how to sign? We're just going to drop them off at a school for the deaf and hope for the best? And weeks, months, years go by. And even if the kid is going to a school for the deaf, by day, they're coming home to a hearing family. If that family has a sit-down dinner, they're sitting down to a dinner where everybody's talking and they have no idea what's being said. No one's including them. No one's catching, you know, how was your day, dear? It was, you know, what did you do in school today? Or how do you feel about it? No, it's eat, brush your teeth, go to bed, because that's all I know how to say to my child. So they're way behind the eight ball in terms of language development. And then they're expected to learn English, a second language, when they haven't yet learned a first language. So therein lies the challenge.
Deaf kids clearly struggle with the education system we provide. But what makes their learning so hard? And what happens when they grow up?
As an interpreter now, who used to be a teacher, I see some of my former students out in the community when I go interpret for them or run into them while interpreting. And there was this one little boy that I didn't want anything to do with. I didn't want him in my class. This kid was a train wreck. He was very angry and he was very forceful. He would tear up a room, and I mean break furniture, hurt people, rip down bulletin boards. He would lose his cool and destroy a space in a couple minutes. I mean, we actually had like a SWAT team. You make the right phone call and you've got four adults show up on your doorstep to take this little guy out. And it would take four adults to carry him out. He would be flailing and saliva flying. I mean, he was a mess. He had a lot of anger. And I don't know, I never knew what happened to this guy. I knew him when he was about 8 or 9. And then I left teaching. And several years go by, and I was on a job interpreting the other day, and this very nice young man comes up to me and he says, "Hi, Julie, do you remember me?" And it was that guy. And he's grown up, he's like 25, he's employed, he's working, helping others. And it was just so wonderful to see him and see that he's doing so well.
This has been Real Time with your host, Alex, brought to you by the Home of Radio in Philadelphia. I'm saying good night and good luck. Keep listening.